Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Well, hi, friends. I hope everybody's doing well in this June weather all around the world. It's a little cold and chilly in Denver today, but boy, we have 90 degrees one day and it's really cool the next. It kind of reminds me of behaviors of people with various dementias. Some days they're cool, some days they're hot, and we're trying to figure out what the heck is going on. So today we're going to talk about modifying behaviors. And I'm going to go through a couple of different behaviors that seem to be really troublesome for most of the care partners and caregivers that I know and I talk to. And I just wanted to see what I can do to help you with some of these things today. So why do we need to modify behaviors? Sometimes we need to modify our own behavior. Sometimes we're trying to modify the behavior of the person with the disease. Right? And so some of the things that happen, we fail to realize when the person is content and when they're not content. And we maybe approach them at the wrong time. That can definitely create a behavior. So trying to figure out, you know, are we walking in on them when they're, you know, laser focused on a television set? Or they're trying to clean a kitchen. They're telling us, can't you see? I've cleaned this kitchen really, really great today. I've done this task. I've done that task. And we're saying, yeah, uh-huh. So you've always done those tasks. That was one I got this morning. I had a gentleman who called me and said that his wife seems to want to point out everything that she has done in the house. And so I had to ask him to modify the way he responds to her. This particular woman is getting pretty progressed now. She's in mid-stage, and she is struggling more and more with depression and feeling like her world is spinning out of control. So the result of that is that she ends up being just one lane focused on anything that she does. If she likes to go out on the back patio and pick up pine cones, she'll pick up 6 or 7 bags of pine cones, which wouldn't seem, you know, not normal in most general cases, especially if she was going to make a wreath or something like that. But in general, she's just going out there and picking up pine cones because it steadies her mind and she wants to relax. But her husband sees it as a laser-focused activity that he may need to curb. And I said, you know, what you need to do is make sure you have eyes on her so that she doesn't wander off somewhere, but just let her pick up the pine cones. Why is it a problem? We have this need as care partners, caregivers, to be right all the time, that we have to control the ship. But yet we complain when they're shadowing us, when they're sticking to us too closely. And I don't want to be critical of the person that called me this morning, but I want to point out that when we have these issues, we really focus way too much on what that person is doing and then turn right around and say, I don't get enough time alone. Well, that's your time alone. When your person's out there picking up the pine cones or whatever activity you can relate this to, where you can see, you know, a parallel existence or issue, why don't you take that time to go make that phone call you wanted to make or work on the computer for a little while that you wanted to do or go up and take a shower or go in the kitchen and get yourself something to eat? Whatever. Take that time yourself to figure out what is going to really be the issue and where you can steal time to be by yourself. So we get more and more of these things. And going back to this client, when his wife is pointing out all the little things that she has done, the little tasks that she has completed, I told him, I said, she's double-checking herself at that point to say, hey, today I was able to clean the kitchen. I was actually able to complete all the steps to clean the kitchen. Can you see what I did? Will you please come in and look at it? And that's a chance for you to go in and really just rejoice with the person that they did a great job of cleaning the kitchen. Not, oh, big deal, you've cleaned the kitchen 1,000 times. This is where we need to modify the care partner behavior. It is a big deal that she could clean the kitchen today. It's a huge deal. And being able to acknowledge that in a very positive and content and constructive positive way is going to be the difference on whether or not the wife goes up in her room and cries or sits and is depressed for a while or, you know, she just gets a hug from her husband and says, oh, this makes me feel so good. One of the kudos that I want to give to the husband that called me this morning was the fact that he said, I followed your advice to give her more hugs, and I see that that's had a dramatic effect on her demeanor, that she seems happier, that she seems more content and safe and loved. And I'm not kidding you, folks. If you want to curb what you think are symptoms in your loved ones, the best way to start is by giving kudos for things that they've done and giving, you know, additional hugs as you go along. So when you are looking at something that somebody's doing wrong, when you're looking at what you think is a problem, this laser-focused issue and things like that, I want you to think about how you can change that issue to being a positive result, okay? So activities give you information. They help you with the dementia as it's coming to you and the progression is coming to you, and it's a way for you to read what is going on. So from your perspective as a caregiver, the actions of that person and their reactions should provide you with important caregiver information. What is it that they're trying to tell you? What is it that they're trying to show you? If you can figure out if they are content or if they're happy or if they're not happy, if they are being engaged, if they're being interested, if whatever they're doing is allowing them to find some peace, some calmness, are they relaxed? Are they neutral? Are they focused? Are they satisfied? These are good things, not bad things. These are good things. When they're focusing and they're really looking at the object that they're working with, and they're picking it up, it's tactile, it's sensory, those kinds of things. Are they discontent? Are they unhappy? Do they look distressed? Do you need to move them out of that range that they're in? Do they look angry? Do they look bored? Do they look agitated? Look at those things. If they don't, leave it alone. I think we have more issues with behaviors and trying to modify behaviors because of the fact that we're not really looking at what is truly a behavior. I'll tell you what I think is a behavior: when somebody hits you, when somebody's hitting you or yelling at you or screaming at you, those are behaviors, not being laser focused or announcing that they did a good job on something. Okay? So if you have a problem that is difficult or problematic, and it occurs more than one time, and it's happened over and over and over, you know, during time and things like that, I want you to look at what was happening around the time when the person was having a problem. Okay? And did you need to solve it right at that moment? Or you know, could you put it on a back shelf and just kind of let them work through that anger and that frustration of them being confused and not being able to remember what they were doing so it's come out as a negative response? Does it have to be addressed right this second? Think about that. If you're angry about something, if you're trying to, read instructions to fix a table or put something together, and somebody comes up and talks to you and starts saying, hey, do you need any help with that? Can I hand you any tools? And you're just like, get away. leave me alone. Let me figure this out myself. When we are cognitively stable, emotionally stable, we often want to just work through a problem by ourselves. Why would that be different for a person with Alzheimer's? It's different because there's been a diagnosis and we suddenly think every single thing we see needs an action. Every single thing needs an action. It really doesn't. We don't always have to solve it when the person is in that crisis. We can study what they're doing. As problems and behavior surface, we can give them names for it. You know, like, are they wandering? Are they rummaging? Are they acting out? Oftentimes, this won't necessarily offend the person, and it will help for them to for you to be able to describe what they're doing. If you say, gosh, it seems like you're pretty angry right now. You're sort of lashing out at me. How can we change that? What can I do to make this easier for you? What was agitating you in the first place? Can you tell me? Okay, it gives you a chance to try to address the behavior without necessarily redirecting it or doing something about the problem. Just work at understanding what happened in detail and really study that behavior so that you can describe to that person or to a doctor if you are keeping tabs and want to tell them about things that have happened. That way you really can get a grip on the actual action and say, okay, at 12 o'clock, this is when it started. Maybe they were hungry. Maybe they were tired. Maybe they had to go to the bathroom. So the more you can address what was going on with the person before the anxiety or the perceived behavior started, that can really start to help you time your responses better and assist that person in de-escalating when they're struggling, okay? So think about things like, are they making any sounds or gestures? Are they grimacing? Are they grunting? If they're doing things like hitting you. I had a lady that called me last week, and she said her husband is hitting her. And that is obviously something that does need addressing. But how do we address that? How do we calm them down? Okay. Do they go directly? I was asking her on the phone. Does your husband go directly from being quiet and then gets up to hit you? Or were there any steps in between? Tell me more about what happened. Okay. What happened before the hitting starts? Does the person literally like go, argh! Or starts clenching their fist or tightening up their body, showing you body posture that doesn't seem normal? Are they moving away from you? Are they moving towards you? Were they just swinging at something? Were they just sort of exulting the anger and trying to get it out of their body and you just happened to be close? Or did they actually move towards you and hit you? Or were they fidgeting? Were they moving their arms and hands? Did their face change? What happened? And when did those actions begin? Were they watching TV? Were they angry because you were talking on the phone and not listening to them? Was there too much stimulation in the house? Were there kids running around? What started the whole ball rolling? if we can identify these things, we can try to eliminate them in the path and make sure that if you're talking on the phone, be in a whole nother room. If the TV's on, don't have the local news, because I tell you, there is nothing but negative energy coming out of the politics and the riots and things that are going on. Even this perceivably peaceful demonstrations haven't always been so peaceful. And if they're watching TV and all of a sudden, as a good example, the other night at 7 o'clock, something came on about Rise Up. And for the next 3 hours on Channel 9, it was all going to be everything about the George Floyd incident. Don't leave your loved one sitting in a room with a TV on and watching those kinds of things, because they can't process it. All they process is the anger and the hitting, and they will mimic that behavior. They feed off of the energy of whatever they're seeing. I have talked about this numerous times on my show. So you've got to figure out and stay on top of it. Pay attention. Don't let little kids run around screaming in the area of a person with Alzheimer's or Lewy body or what have you, FTD especially, and make noise when they're trying to be calm. Things like that. Okay? Was there any anxiety going on? Did they eat dinner and eat something they didn't like? How can you relate it back to whatever happened in the last 10 minutes or 20 minutes? Okay? And think about what happened right after they were striking out at you. Did they hit you just once, or did they follow up with hitting you? Did they speak to you when they were hitting you? Did they say anything that could guide you to understanding why they were hitting you? Okay? Just think about those kinds of things. Do they retreat, or do they continue forward when they're trying to hit you? When you can gather that information and you can look at what's happening, you can, like I said, trim down the activities that were going on that could have caused it in the first place. If it came completely unprovoked, this would be information that a doctor would need to know in order to prescribe any antidepressants or any sedatives or anything like that that could calm them down. And do we need any of that? Is it happening 10 times a day, or did it happen just once? So when you go to your doctor and you say, my husband's been hitting me, I don't know what's going on, he's banging on walls and he's doing this or that. The woman on the phone the other night said he would go into the bathroom and just beat on the door. And I said, well, what do you do when he does that? And she said, I tell him to stop doing it. And I said, and you think that that's reasonable? Do you think that he can reason with you to understand that his hitting the wall is unreasonable? How about you go into a room in another part of the house or outside where you can't hear it? Maybe he just needs to hit the wall because he's angry about this freaking disease that he has, and he went in the bathroom to hit the walls, and he's seeing himself in the mirror and saying, I hate what's happening to me. Is it so unreasonable for people to be angry about what's happening to them? I really want you, as my care partners, my caregiver nation, to think about that. Is it so unreasonable that they're angry about what's happening to them? When somebody does something that pisses you off or makes you angry, do you just say to yourself, okay, I'm not going to displace my anger. I'm not going to strike out at anybody or lash at anybody. I'm just going to put it in the back of my mind and forget it, and it doesn't matter anymore. No, we as human beings don't do that. We don't. We just don't. Sometimes we carry that anger all day long. We think about whatever it was that person did that wronged us. We can't let it go. We do tell other people what happened in the scenario, that somebody really made us angry. We hold on to that. But a person with Alzheimer's can't do that. So they get angry. Their filter's short. They hit something, they hit somebody, they may just want to be showing you what they're upset about, but they can't say the word, so it comes out in a physical manifestation. So think about those things. If you need to curb it, if you can say to the person, you seem like you're angry. What can I do to help? Would it help if I gave you a pillow to punch? Can you tell me what you're angry about? Are you angry about the disease? Are you angry about something you saw on TV? What's going on? Talk to me. Try and tell me what you think is disturbing you. So, again, if you can look for the source of that person's discomfort, if you can try to determine the meaning of it, why is he troubled? Why is he angry? The dementia itself is typically not the cause of the behavior. People that have this disease, the disease itself doesn't make them angry. It's external forces that make them angry. I cannot say that strongly enough. People with Alzheimer's are generally pretty easygoing until something triggers that behavior. So it is absolutely critical that you as a care partner stop blaming the disease and look and observe the surroundings and try to figure out what's going on. Okay? Are they restless? Are they looking for an object that they can't name? Okay? They don't have any better way to work it out. They're just looking around and they're trying to find that glass that has water in it, and that they're, because they're thirsty and they can't find the glass of water. They set it down somewhere and they don't remember where it was. These are common things. These are common things that happen in people's houses every day. But they don't have a better way to work it out. Okay? So if you study their behavior in detail, I promise you it's going to offer some clues about what that behavior means to that person. And it, at the very least, is going to give you some ideas that you can pursue to try to figure it out and stop it or decrease the behavior altogether. Okay? So just think about those kinds of things. So as that example, if your family member has hit you, what the person does after the first blow, when they first tagged you, may suggest if they're acting defensively or aggressively. Maybe they were just trying to say, gosh, that upset me. Or maybe they're just genuinely mad about something that has recently affected them on an emotional level, and they don't know how to help you understand. Okay? So look to see if that person is feeling threatened. Are they feeling scared? Are they feeling sad? What happened? Was there lightning outside that freaked them out and scared them? Are there too many lights in the house that is making them feel uncomfortable? Look at your surroundings and try to figure it out. If you can do that and understand the signs, it's going to tell you in the future that a problem is about to erupt and it's something that you need to address. Okay? Also, we cannot underscore how emotional discomfort can really affect somebody. Okay? If that person feels overwhelmed or overtasked by something you've asked them to do, they can't figure out the steps in any problem, getting up and going, getting something to drink, going to the bathroom and pulling their pants down so they went in their pants. Those kind of things can also result in a physical manifestation. If somebody's having incontinence or can't get to the bathroom on time, now you've got a physical problem. Okay? So these things can go from an emotional issue of not being able to name their action, name an object, understand the steps in a task, and all of a sudden it turns into something that is physical, where now we're angry with them because they didn't tell us that they had to go to the bathroom and they've either wet a seat or wet themselves and we have to take them upstairs and get them changed and we show our discomfort, right? So those kinds of things can make a person feel threatened, can make them feel unsafe, and so on and so forth, all right? So again, here's the things that you're going to look at. Did the behavior occur only at certain times of day? Or when they were doing a certain task? Does it seem to happen more often when they're with you alone or when other people are around? Is it a combination of lighting? Is it a combination of stimulus in the room? What is it? Are there ways that you reacted to the behavior that made it worse? Is there something that just kept it going and kept it going? Are you using strategies to calm the person? Are you trying to be calm? Are you talking to them about their feelings? These are things we have to do. I'm not trying to be critical of anybody, okay? When we're in the trenches and we don't have anybody helping us, it's a day-to-day problem. We're constantly trying to figure out, you know, what's the meaning, what's the cause, what's the pattern, what's the effective response of these issues that we're trying to curb or modify the behavior. It's real. The struggle is real. I know many of you are frustrated and you are angry. So I want you to try to really think about the things that I brought to you in the first part of this show and think about what you can do to read your environment, modify your own behavior, modify the stimulation, observe your surroundings, and I promise you it's going to be an easier road. We're going to take a short break, and I'll be right back with more strategies for you.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
All right, so I've been talking about modifying behaviors, and without a doubt, I think in the last week, I've had more calls about hitting and angry behavior, people yelling. I feel like some of this is a result of everything that's been going on in the country. We haven't been able to get out of our houses. We haven't been able to go to restaurants. We haven't been able to have family members over. We're overwhelmed. We're struggling with fatigue, some anger, some depression ourselves. And on top of all that, we have a person living with us, a family member, a husband, a wife, an aunt, an uncle, a brother, a sister, whoever it is, that has a dementia disease, right? So if we think about it, if you can, again, look at the cause, it's likely that you'll be able to offer one or more possible reasons why it started in the first place, what triggered it. Look for the meaning. Really examine it. Do a really good examination. And produce speculation about what the behavior meant. Why were they doing it? Why? Is there a pattern? Have they done this more than once? Does it occur at a certain time of day? And then provide an effective response for it, okay? You may enable yourself to pinpoint the times during the behavior when it's more possible than others to stop the behavior or to curb it. You might be able to pinpoint when they take a breath or when they might turn for a second and seemingly calm down for just a second, that you might be able to change the situation. So look for those effective responses. Now, what strategies can we use? If you can predict what might cause your family member to become agitated or combative, hateful, hitting, whatever it is, you might be able to prevent this from happening, okay? If the causes are known, try to avoid those situations. If you know what's causing it, don't go there. This is simple. I'll give you an example. If the person becomes upset and shouts when you try to get them washed up, this happens a lot, right? Before breakfast, before dinner, before bedtime, be prepared to try other things. Wait till a different time of day. Look for a different way to wash them. Do we have to get them in the shower? Can we just wash up at the sink? Could we wash underarms and underneath the breasts or whatever, around somebody's neck or their face when they've been sweating, and then maybe try later in the day to see if you get them to soak their feet in a tub and then wash their legs and their other private parts and things like that? Do we always have to do it the same way? Do we always have to get them in a bath or a shower? You're making it harder for yourself if you're so, you know, hell-bent on doing it a certain way at a certain time. If you're trying to get them in a bath or a shower and they're fighting you, sit down and have a cup of coffee. Work a puzzle. Go for a walk. Do something else. Don't push the issue if they're not mentally there. We as caregivers, as care partners, we sometimes create those instances when a person can get agitated by having them work on our timetable. And I promise you, you do that, you're going to lose. You're never going to win an argument with a person that has a degenerative brain disease. Never. Let me say that again. You're never going to win an argument with a person with a degenerative brain disease. So why pick it in the first place? Why pick the fight? I'm telling you, don't do it. Don't do it. Especially those intimate tasks like bathing, because the person has to get undressed. They may not want to do it in front of a child. They may not want to get completely naked in front of a caregiver. They may just not feel comfortable with somebody in the bathroom with them when they're going to the bathroom. Now, seriously, people, really? Who in the world wants somebody in the bathroom with them when you're going to the bathroom? The answer is no one. But we do this to people with Alzheimer's. We go into the bathroom with them. We stand there while they're going potty. Really? Once you get them to sit down and go to the bathroom, walk out for a minute. Pull the door shut just a little bit so you can see if they're fumbling around looking for toilet paper. And then you can use cueing to guide them. And if you have to open the door back up and help them clean themselves or whatever it is, if the situation's that serious, which for many of you, it really truly is, I get it. But don't stand there in the bathroom with them the whole time. And then you wonder why they kick you or they hit you. Oh, my God. People, really, I'm not trying to criticize, but I'm telling you, you've got to find another way. Think about it from the perspective of what if it were you? What if somebody was standing in the bathroom with you while you were trying to go to the bathroom? How would you feel? Think about these things. We create a lot of the behaviors we blame on the disease. Okay? So you're going to have to look for some key actions, and they could be tiny. Is it their facial expression? Can you see them grimacing? What are you looking at? What can we focus on and make sure that we're paying attention to so that we can try to, you know, deal with this as best that we can? These are difficult issues. How do you behave? How do you yourself behave when you're faced with a troubling behavior that's going to have an impact on whether or not that behavior of the person, the symptom of the person, continues or stops. So sometimes we just have to back off. Sometimes we just have to make sure the person is in a safe place and not anywhere where they can hurt themselves, that they have a drink that they could, you know, sip, or it's quiet in the room. It's better sometimes to stop your action rather than to risk letting the situation grow and become a huge source of discomfort for both you and that person, okay? Because all it's going to do is turn into some kind of an outburst. So keep in mind that the task or the activity at hand is not the point, okay? It's almost always the case that the activity doesn't have to get done. You don't have to get them in the bathtub at that time. They don't have to eat lunch at that time, okay? If the tone of the particular movement is in a direction opposite of contentment or contented involvement, stop. Pause. Don't push it. You won't win. You won't win. We as humans think a lot of times that we have to be totally in control, that we have to be on the mark, that everything has to be exactly as we want it to be. And that is not true. It is not true. So I'm going to give you another example. And I know a zillion of you listeners have had this one happen. So literally, at least 10 times in the last 2 weeks, I have heard complaints from the care partners that the people with the diagnosis are trying to help them with dishes. I don't know why this is such a big deal in our homes around the world, but the person with the disease wants to come in and help with the dishes. And inevitably, what happens is that they don't get the dishes clean. And the person is angry about it. Right? They're asking what the various utensils are. They're not setting the table correctly. If they want to come into the room, it's almost like from the second they start to ask, can they help with the dishes, we build a wall up. No, you can't help. It's easier and faster if I do it myself, right? And guess what? Then it becomes a behavior. We have hurt feelings. Suddenly the person is angry, and you think to yourself, well, geez, it probably would have been easier if I would have just let them help me, because now they're mad and they're banging things around and I'm getting repetitive questions and this is starting to become agitating for both of us. So, okay, you can go ahead and help me. But guess what? Now it's ruined. The activity is ruined. The person doesn't want to help you anymore. So it's really stunning to me how many people are dealing with this. So if the person with the diagnosis washes the dishes and doesn't get them clean, why don't you let them dry the dishes? You can wash the dishes. Well, somebody said to me the other day, because I always wash the dishes and my husband always dried the dishes. Okay, so if you don't modify your behavior and let there be a change in the system, you're going to continue to have that problem. And guess what? It's a progressive disease. They're not going to get any better at washing the dishes. It's much safer for them to dry the dishes. So now, what's the problem? Well, they don't get the dishes completely dry. So I ask you, as care partners and caregivers, what would you prefer? Would you prefer that they don't engage in the activity and enjoy being by your side? That they feel like they're still being helpful? That they're still able to communicate with you, that they still feel the ability to complete a task that has been innate to them for many, many years, and they're now struggling with it, and all they want is your acknowledgement that they're trying to participate and that they like being with you and they still want to be a viable part of this family unit and help with the dishes, that's option A. Or option B, that you are so dead right that they are not getting the dishes clean, that they are not drying the dishes well, and that it would be so much easier if they just stayed out of the kitchen and didn't participate, because that would be easier for you, and you could be completely right that the dishes are completely clean and they're completely dry and can go into the cabinet and be just completely perfect in Mayberry. Okay? So what is the result of that? The result of it is that the person doesn't feel safe. They don't feel loved. They feel like you're trying to divert or distract them or judge them or not make them feel good. And the other result is that now that you don't let them participate anymore, they're losing that skill completely. They're losing trust in you. And guess what we get? Repetitive questions. People ask repetitive questions when they don't feel safe. And now again, we're going to blame it on the disease instead of our health, instead of ourselves, because we cut out something that person enjoyed doing. Why do we need to be right? Why do we need to be right? Why do we as humans need to have everything so perfect? Who cares? If they don't get the dish clean, after they walk out of the kitchen and you're all done, go back in and clean the spots. Yes, you heard me say this. Pull them back out of the cabinet and make sure they're clean. Put them in the dishwasher. Turn the dishwasher on. Just put the sink back full with water and some dish soap and rewash them when they're not in the room. Is it more important to have the clean dishes and discourage the person or to let that person think that they did a good job and move on with life? Right? It is super important to restore the calmness in your house and make the safety of that person feels so strong that they are content. And over time, we can try to learn what works for us to divert or distract that person from the situation that's turning sour and to literally use strategies that are beneficial to everybody. Now, you may say, well, that's not beneficial to me. I'm not enjoying my dirty dishes. Again, why do we need to be right? Okay? So think about these things. Where are these troubling behaviors happening? What are we doing to fuel the fire? Right? We need to own some of this, folks. We need to own it, because if you don't own it, the situation is not going to change. You can do the same thing you've always done. And you're, guess what? You're always going to get the same result. I'm telling you, the Alzheimer's, Lewy body, frontal temporal, they give us enough problems just with the brain malfunctioning. Don't make it worse for yourself by being so picky around things in your house. The one thing that is constant in life is change. We have to change. We have to be savvy. We have to be thoughtful. We have to be compassionate. Because if you're not, I guarantee the result you're going to get is discord, dysfunction, unhappy, shadowing people that are depressed. That's what you're going to get. So we either keep doing it the same way and get the same result. And you know, the definition of insanity is doing things the same way over and over and expecting a different result. We have to try to change our thought process. You're not going to succeed every time, right? Sometimes the first try doesn't work. But managing behaviors, definitely your own, will help you to re-examine what happened. What actually caused all these problems? What role did I play? How did I diffuse it? Was I being too picky? Was I being thoughtful? Right? Was I being judgmental? Was I really helping my person out? Was I maintaining their dignity? Or was I destroying it? Am I working so hard at everything being just so perfect in my house that I can't allow a little joy through problem issues? It's almost like having kids, you know, where they are writing on something and all of a sudden they write on a piece of paper that you didn't want them to write on. And we have to think, can I recreate what was on that piece of paper, or is it just ruined? Do I have to get mad about it? Do I have to have a response? You know, cause and effect, people, cause and effect. It's super important that you remember, while whatever mystery it is of what caused this whole thing in the first place, if it remains unsolved, the one thing that you have to know is that person isn't doing something to intentionally hurt or upset you. They're not. They're not saying to themselves, I'm going to ask if this is a fork because I want to get yelled at or to look stupid. They're not going to not clean the dishes perfectly because they think, well, this will be fun to upset my wife. Right? They're not. They don't think that way. They just don't think that way. So examine yourself, examine the thoughts, examine the processes, and see what role you play, okay? If you have a zone of tolerance that shrinks, the person that is with you is going to become more easily overwhelmed by everything that's going on around them. And they're going to be more readily upset because they don't have enough to do or they're not saying the right thing, right? And the ability to recognize and tell someone that they are close to a limit of what they can deal with really isn't there. We can say it. We can say, I'm on my last nerve with this person or what have you. But a person with Alzheimer's can't do that. Right? So if we use techniques to back away from whatever stress is forgotten and unused, and we have to pull it out and slam it against the wall like spaghetti to make sure it sticks, not working for you. It's not going to work for you. Okay? And when you or the person that you are living with reaches a threshold, the person with the Alzheimer's has fewer ways to express how they feel. They really do. They have a lot fewer ways to say, I'm unhappy. I'm sad. I'm really ticked off right now. I wish people would get out of my space. I need somebody to understand that I'm frustrated. I don't want to be frustrated. I just want my life back. Stop answering me for me when I can't get the word, right? So what happens? They explode. The explosion would turn into like a catastrophic reaction, right? This is where those occur, when the person doesn't have a way to express how they feel. And the idea of a catastrophic reaction is pretty self-evident. It means that the person is triggered by things going on and that the response is very strong. Okay? There's a clear sense that the reaction comes on really quickly and unexpectedly, and that it has a strength to it like a tornado, and that person just lashes out. And then it seems like it's completely out of proportion. So think about that for a second. If they are lacking the ability to say and come up with effective responses to show you or tell you how they are feeling in that instance, it's going to turn into a physical response. That's what's happening. So again, folks, as you're dealing with these really, really difficult behaviors, I just want to tell you that when that catastrophic reaction happens, it's really hard to bring things back to a normal place, right? A normal level. It's really, really hard. So you have to find a way to regain calmness and to help that person deal with their emotion. Look at the emotional response, not the action. Again, I've said this over and over and over again. Why are they angry? You know, why are they sad? Why are they crying? Not the fact that they hit you. Okay? Think about those things. So I've had a lot to talk to you about today. And again, I really enjoy talking to you when I have letters from people, when I have phone calls from people. And this is one of the things that is really a big issue of the angry behavior, the inability to channel it in an effective, appropriate way where somebody can read it and respond to it correctly. We're going to have to be detectives. We're going to have to look at what's happening in our homes and what created the situation. And again, try to come up with an effective response so that you can walk down that pathway and not be completely obliterated emotionally and not knowing, you know, did I handle that correctly or did I not? So here's the main keys about what we've been talking about today. You have to be a detective. You have to look at what happened in your environment. Look at your own actions and try to deal with the emotion, not the issue. And you'll all be a lot happier. I know that these conversations are difficult, that these actions are difficult, and many of you deal with these all day long, day in and day out, multiple times a day. So start writing down when these things are happening and look at the situation and say, what clues can it give me so I can stop or redirect these outbursts before they happen? All right? I love you all out there in Caregiver Nation. I'm sure I'll get several letters about this. Tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what you need. And I'll try my best to dig down deep in your homes and help you with these things that are going on. But I hope, if nothing else, you've been enlightened today and maybe we'll look at your situation in just a little bit different light. All right. I'll see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. Please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.